Steve, what the other distribution is referring to is other states that have looked at this legislation ran into the issue that people were giving away unsafe recalled goods for free.
I can actually do a follow-up purpose. I believe that's the intent, is to ensure that retailers would not say, for example, give recall products to a charity or otherwise dispose of, give it away for free. That they have to remove the product.
Chair Holley, Representative Bonamici, I will confirm that for you and get back to you all with an email.
Any other comments, questions? Representative Polizio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know what time we got these drafts.
About 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
4 o'clock, okay. So I haven't read through it, but just quickly, how does it deal with online sales? In other words, so consumers in this state, it concerns only that which is sold to somebody in Oregon? Or what if Oregon is the origin of where something is sold? I mean, how does it work online?
Chair Holby, Representative Galizio, it could arguably be both. When you're talking about resale on the internet, it would come down to a couple things. One, since this is under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, that would have to be the person's vocation. So if you have a product that happens to be recalled and you're reselling it on eBay and that's not your vocation and that's not your job, we're not going to investigate that. The second part of that is a jurisdictional question. Where we have the appropriate jurisdiction under Oregon law, we could arguably investigate somebody who's selling from Oregon and arguably investigate somebody who's selling into Oregon.
Any other further questions, comments? I think this is a pretty simple concept and something I was surprised that it was legal to sell recalled products to start with. And, I think this is a good tool for the Department of Justice to make sure that we're doing what we can to protect people from, and children specifically, from some products that may be harmful. So I appreciate Mr. Scholl, you coming forward and answering any specifics that we have, and your work on putting together this draft as well was helpful.
Thank you.
So is there anyone else? Representative Bonamici?
Are you ready to entertain a motion?
Well, not yet. I'm going to ask to see if there's anyone else that wishes to testify in this public hearing on LC 78.
Sure.
Nobody signed up at this point, but I see someone coming forward.
Yes.
Thank you, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Certainly. Chair Holley, members of the committee, Matt Wallace, Consumer Associate with OSPIRG. And, I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity to testify on Legislative Concept 78 today. I'll keep my comments very brief, as I think that the overview of the bill is stated. You know, this is a simple step forward and a great way to close a loophole that many of us are surprised exists. But to put the issue in just a little bit more context, as many have noted, 2007 was the year of the recall, just with millions of toys, including pretty high profile mainstream toys like Thomas the Tank and Barbie, recalled for threats including toxic lead, toxic chemicals, choking hazards, and small magnetic hazards, pulled from shelves. And again, these toys reaching the millions and millions. And of course, we also saw previously unheard of threats to children's toys. Many of you may remember the Aqua Dots recall, which actually contained an ingredient that metabolized into a powerful drug when swallowed. Unfortunately, the wave of recalls hasn't ended yet. This past November, actually, OSPIRG released our 22nd annual Trouble in Toyland report, alerting consumers to dangerous toys and children's products on the market. And it's already resulted in one recall by the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And over the last 22 years that we've been doing the report, we've actually seen over 100 recalls as a result of that investigative work. Lead especially is an issue that we've highlighted for a number of years as having no place at all in children's products, and of course that was a hallmark of the recent wave of recalls from the Consumer Product Safety Commission and other federal agencies when it comes especially to children's products. Again, Legislative Concept 78 highlights a stark failure of existing federal law, namely that, that recalls are not mandatory, they're voluntary, and it is still, especially from the CPSC specifically, and it is still, again, perfectly legal to sell recalled toys. So, the proposed bill would address that problem at the state level, and we, it really comprises a common sense first step towards keeping dangerous products out of the hands of our children. So, on behalf of Osberg, I urge this committee to approve these policies and these concepts, and certainly urge Oregon's elected officials to take every opportunity to keep dangerous products out of the hands of our children. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a report that Osberg does. Where can one find that report?
Sure, you can actually find it on our website, www.osberg.org. There should be a link to recent reports or toy safety. You can find at least the last couple of editions of the report there.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for...
quick question.
Oh. Representative Gilliam, a quick question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your research...
came to you slowly, though.
Did. Well, a lot of things do. In your research, what do you know about other states and how they're closing the loophole in their areas?
To early Representative Gilliam, I know that in this particular loophole, a variety of other states have acted. I believe New York and Illinois have been, pursuing this avenue most aggressively. As far as the specifics of the legislation, I'm not too well versed off the top of my head, but definitely it's an issue that many states, it seems like, are pursuing, and obviously just a common sense first step to to keeping these toys out of the hands of our children.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you making the effort to be here.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And, Mr. Chair, before we go into work session, I should point out to you the written testimony presented just now by Lisa Frack. She is a parent and a blogger from Portland.
So noted. We'll enter her testimony into the record. Anybody else that would like to speak on LC 78? The time is now. Seeing no one jumping for that opportunity, I will close the public hearing on LC 78 and open up a work session on LC 78. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that LC 78 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
Representative Bonamici moves that LC 78 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session. Is there any discussion? Representative Gerard.
Mr. Chair, this looks like a great bill, but it hasn't been vetted, so as always, the vote to introduce it doesn't necessarily equate to a vote in support.
That is quite true. Thank you for noting that. Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, this does not preclude us from considering other bills. I don't understand the rules we're going to be under exactly in February, but I want to clarify that. Are we considering other issues as well?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so this doesn't lock us into this as our bill.
This is just one bill.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion that LC 78 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session will vote aye, and those opposed vote no. And could we have the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Galicia?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bolton? Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Excused.
Chair Holby?
Aye.
LC 78, having received the required votes, will be recommended for introduction. With that, I'll close the work session on LC 78 and open a public hearing on LC 43.
Mr. Chair, committee members, LC 43 contains two of the three legislative concepts that were approved by the governor's mortgage lending work group to be considered for the February special session. All three concepts have been discussed prior in previous hearings by representatives from the work group and the Department of Consumer and Business Services. LC 43 focuses on the regulation of foreclosure consultants and equity purchasers and requires lenders to provide homeowners who are at risk of foreclosure with clear and understandable information on how to avoid the closure sale.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to invite the Department of Consumer and Business Services up. They led this governor's work group on, or task force on, mortgage lending, and I think she can provide us a very good overview of that process and the bill before us.
I think Mr. Carnes and Mr. Ambrose are also going to be presenting overviews on this bill, so I didn't know if you wanted them to. Well,
they're more than welcome to come up now if you'd like. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Oh, Chair. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, there's questions to the people who... Mr. Chair, I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to support LC 43. As Ms. Van Winkle has indicated, it is one of the products of the work group, which a number of you have been actively engaged in, and as you know, we have appeared before this committee several times over the past few months to update you on the progress of that group and some of the issues that have been discussed. In my testimony, I've given some of the background of the situation we find ourselves in now, and I think you're all familiar with what's happened with the mortgage lending markets nationally over the past 6 to 8 months. Generally, the rise in foreclosures nationally has caused a severe contraction in the credit markets, particularly the subprime credit markets, although, of course, we are now seeing the credit contraction spread to the broader market as well. And with the drying up of the subprime market, one of the features of many subprime loans is they're often adjustable rate mortgages that have an introductory period. And as those introductory low-rate periods have run out, without subprime lending available, it's been very difficult for people with those loans to refinance, and that then feeds the cycle of increased foreclosures. Here in Oregon, we have been fortunate thus far. We have not seen the very severe increase in foreclosures that many other states have seen, but we do still see grounds for concern as we look forward, and we have seen an increase in foreclosures here in Oregon. And I've provided you with some of the statistics in my written testimony. Overall, although, again, we're still fairly low, we have seen a 50% increase in foreclosures over the past 15 months, and we've seen a 95% increase in foreclosures in subprime lending. If we look at loans, today, our most recent numbers that we have is end of third quarter 2007, and if we look at where we are today with loans that are at risk of foreclosure, that is 90 days or more delinquent or in foreclosure, in particular in subprime loans, 5.17% of all subprime loans fell into that category, 7.01% of subprime adjustable rate mortgages are in the 90 days delinquent or more category. So for people who have loans with those features, the picture is not is looking troubling. And the U.S. Government Accountability Office, the GAO, has estimated that there are in Oregon, and this is at the end of October 2007, over 88,000 subprime loans outstanding, many of which have adjustable rate features or teaser rate features, and they have forecasted more than 12,000 foreclosures in Oregon over the next 2 to 3 years. So that is the ground for our concern about the foreclosure situation, potentially 12,000 Oregon families losing their homes. And so one of the focus areas of the work group and one of the focus areas for our department has been what can we do to prevent or ameliorate some of the risks associated with foreclosure.
And the concepts in LC43 are aimed at two different aspects of the problem. One of them is something that has started to pop up here in Oregon, and it has shown itself in other states that have high foreclosure rates, and that is the what is sometimes called mortgage rescue schemes. People who approach those facing foreclosure with offers to help. And the offers could be in the form of we can provide you with advice, we can fix your credit, sort of the consultant type of services. Sometimes those are real, sometimes they are not. Sometimes the person offering the services takes the cash and then is never seen again. Sometimes some of these transactions take the form of actual offers and transactions in which the other party to the transaction actually takes title to the home, often with a promise to rent it or lease it back to the homeowner and allow the homeowner to buy the property back several years later. But in fact, the terms then often are such that that's not possible for the homeowner, and because the homeowner has lost their title to their home and is now a renter, they in fact can't afford the payments and are evicted and lose their homes that way, often with the loss of any equity that they may have accumulated. So that whole area of the mortgage rescue schemes is one of the areas addressed in this bill, and others are going to go into more detail as to what the bill contains, and I've also included an overview attached to my testimony of the points in the bill. The second area that LC 43 addresses is information that's provided to borrowers facing foreclosure. And right now, the information that's provided is a stack of technical fine print. In fact, when someone is facing foreclosure, there are things right now that they can do to help themselves, and that there are resources available. There are counseling resources available. And we have been working along with the Housing and Community Development Department to locate and identify more housing more consulting or counseling resources. And there are national organizations as well as local services that will work with homeowners facing foreclosure to help them identify their options. In addition, many lenders have workout programs now, because particularly in today's market, it is not useful to a lender to take a house back into inventory in foreclosure. It hurts their books, and the market is starting to slow down. So this is not a good time for a lender to be doing a lot of foreclosures. Many of them have responded with workout programs, but borrowers often aren't aware of those programs, and the numbers that we have heard is that over half of homeowners who face foreclosure go all the way through the process without ever contacting their lender to see what options are available. So this bill provides useful information at the point when foreclosure is pending to make sure that borrowers know what resources are available to them. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, or you may want to hear from the other folks up here.
Why don't we go ahead and hear from the rest of the testimony from the panel for us before we ask questions, and if you would just identify yourself for the record before you speak, that would be great. And I'd also like to acknowledge Representative Bonamici and her participation in the subcommittees on this work group, as well as the whole work group is out as well. She was worked very closely with me and the work group in trying to make sense out of this issue and come forward with something that we hope will help consumers, and I think it is on its way to do that. So with that brief little introduction, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, Vice Chair Bonamici, members of the committee. My name is Chris Ambrose. I'm with Ambrose Law Group, and I guess I'm now in that netherworld known as immediate past president of the Oregon Mortgage Lenders Association. I did have the opportunity to serve on the task force with other members of this committee, worked on the subcommittees with particularly Representative Bonamici, and will attest to the fact that there were an inordinate amount of hours spent going through these documentation through this proposed legislation. While in principle or in concept, it would seem that the concepts are fairly straightforward, the devil is in the details, as you well know, and there was a lot of discussion about those particular details. I am going to address the first two components of the proposed legislation, LC 43, which addresses the foreclosure consultants and the equity conveyance concepts, and we'll try to be brief. With respect to the, as Ms. Streisinger identified, there are two primary components that we started with respect to this particular legislation in an attempt to address something that homeowners can be assisted with right now. One is the number of foreclosure consultants that are out there trying to quote-unquote save a person's house, to postpone a foreclosure sale, or to do something with the with a homeowner to, again, theoretically or conceptually, to help them stay in their property. The other aspect is the more complex scenario in which somebody, a homeowner, actually transfers over their house to a third party, and then there may or may not be promises that they're going to be able to get their house back. So the first concept, the foreclosure consultants, is defined in your in LC 43 on the second page, section 2. I won't read it, but essentially it is defined as somebody that is with the expectation of compensation coming forward and attempting to help a homeowner to postpone, prevent, or stop a foreclosure sale, obtain a forbearance, and then right on down the line, a number of different scenarios in which that person is representing that they are going to help that person save their house. The requirements of the legislation of LC 43 provide in great part that there is now going to be a written contract that's required. The written contract is going to require that the terms for both payment, compensation, and specifically the services that are going to be provided are going to have to be laid out in the contract. That contract needs to be provided 24 hours, be provided to the homeowner by the foreclosure consultant 24 hours in advance. The legislation also has rescission rights or cancellation rights so that this person, the homeowner, may at any point in time elect to walk away from the transaction. There also is a provision that the foreclosure consultant also may not be the equity purchaser, which I'll get into. Bottom line is that the foreclosure consultant has to decide at the conception of their arrangement whether or not they're going to actually consult the homeowner or if they're actually interested in buying the house and entering into some arrangement with the homeowner. I did notice that, and it was brought to my attention, that in the summary, it actually reverses the potential penalties that I believe the task force ultimately agreed to. In the summary, it references that a violation of the foreclosure consultant laws would be an unfair trade practice and provide a private cause of action. Actually, that would be provided with the, unless perhaps I missed a meeting or something, that would be actually provided with the equity conveyance provisions. So that, and the same penalties would apply in reverse order with respect to the equity purchasers. With respect to the equity conveyances, there actually are two requirements. It's not simply a situation in which somebody that this legislation would apply to a homeowner who simply turns over their property to a third person. So if a realtor, for example, or a third person comes forward and says, I would like to buy your house, I'll give you some money for it, and it's a pure third-party transaction, then the legislation wouldn't apply. The legislation would apply only to the situation in which the homeowner is going to sell the property to a third party, and that third party is going to enter into an arrangement with them to allow the homeowner to lease back the property or have the property deeded back to them in some form or another down the line. So it addresses that specific scenario. What has become really common, as many of you have seen, are these lease back arrangements. And that's primarily what this legislation is intended to address, at least the equity purchaser concept. The equity purchaser concept also has a right to cancel or a right of rescission within a certain period of time. The homeowner can at any point in time elect to walk away from this transaction. And the legislation also provides that there are more formalities with respect to what the transaction needs to look like, namely that it needs to occur at a with a settlement agent at a settlement agent's place of business so that you don't have the transaction in which the purchaser shows up at the kitchen table and transacts a deal on a moment's notice. So it does get around that aspect of it. The homeowner also the purchaser, I should say, also was required to ascertain the ability, the reasonable ability of the homeowner to actually be able to repurchase the house if they enter into this leaseback arrangement, so that they could not, for example, enter into an arrangement in which it's understood that the homeowner is not going to be able to meet the lease payments, or is not going to, at least in theory or based on the documentation at that time, have any reasonable ability to repurchase the house 18 months, 2 years, whatever it might be down the line. There is a rebuttable presumption based on the person's income level and whether or not, and their liabilities, and whether or not they'd be able to actually afford it at 60%. There also is a provision that enables the homeowner to get a portion of the net proceeds of the sale of the property if that person does not exercise his or her, the homeowner does not exercise his or her option to purchase the property somewhere down the line. So if, for example, the lease option is a 2-year period, the homeowner does not, during that period of time, exercise his or her right to purchase the property, and the property is sold during that period of time, the purchaser would have to provide 82% of the net proceeds, which is defined in the statute, 82% of the net proceeds back to the homeowner within 15 days of the date of closing of the transaction. And again, there are it would constitute an unfair trade practice if there is a violation of the statute. Those, I believe, are the primary areas, and I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Barnes, you wish to provide some testimony?
I do. Thank you. Representative Holvey, member of the committee, my name is Keith Carnes. I'm an attorney at Olson, Olson & Daines, and I practice exclusively consumer law, and a large portion of my cases deal just with mortgage and home issues. I'm a member of many national and state consumer organizations, but I'm here at the request of ECBS just as myself and not representing any of those committees. Two points about the matters that Mr. Ambrose was just discussing. First of all, is these are really last resort situations. You know, a lot of these people who are entering into these agreements have tried workouts. They've tried asking friends and relatives for money. They may have tried to do a reorganization through the bankruptcy courts, but they are doing whatever they can to save their homes. And so any way that we can have for some people who have no other options to stay in their homes with the prospect of gaining full employment or recovering their health and being able to have the income to then again afford their house, these are certainly beneficial for those people who have no other options. These certainly aren't their first options. These are their last. The concern is that there's really no regulation of this system as it currently stands. One client recently came to me and he signed a document which created a trust, put his home into the trust. The person who was essentially who bought the house, this $250,000 house he bought for $12,000, because there's this complicated series of trust documents that were signed all at the same time, where the home was put into a trust, the purchaser was named the trustee of the trust, and my client also transferred his beneficiary interest to the trustee at the same time. And so he owns every part of that house, explaining that, you know, I'm just putting this house into a trust and you'll be able to, you know, have all these options to buy it back. This was just a sale. I mean, that's all that happened was there was a flat sale of this house. So there's this blue-collar worker who's trying to keep his house for him and his wife, and there's substantial equity in it, and he sold it for around $20,000 because this didn't go through the proper... There's no way to go through a proper closing and things like that unless we require them to do that. I mean, there's ways to do it. They're choosing not to do it. They're trying to take these people's homes. I've had a few clients who have had their homes taken for, you know, $20,000, $25,000 when they were facing foreclosure, when they could have just sold it on the open market and pocketed, you know, two to three times that amount, sometimes 10 times that amount. And so I would urge adoption of this statute because it's helpful to have these people out there, but we don't want them stealing people's houses without telling them what they're doing. The second issue that this work group had been tackling was notification about people's rights when they're in foreclosure. when somebody's in foreclosure, they get a notice of foreclosure that, as was mentioned, contains a lot of legal jargon and a lot of things that common folks may not understand. We created a form which would put plain language and very simple to understand terms so that they can understand that their home is going to be sold because they haven't been making payments on it, when it would be sold, and what they have to do to keep it from being sold. One of the concerns that I've spoken to people about repeatedly is that they'll call and say, what can I do to keep my house? And they'll say, well, you're five payments behind, so you owe $5,000 plus the foreclosure cost that we've advanced so far and these other things. And they need to come up with a lump sum of, $6,000, $7,000. Many lenders are willing to enter into workout agreements and forbearance agreements. This notice is intended to have the borrower start asking for those things and to go into a loss mitigation department instead of a call center where they just tell facts, but they can get more to a problem-solving center where they can have people who are willing and able to work out agreements to keep these people in their homes and catch up their mortgage payments and be able to save their houses. And so this notice does both of those things. It tells them what's happening. It tells them when and where things are going to happen. This is on page 32 of the version that I have of LC 43. And it lets them also know that, there are organizations out there who can help, and there's organizations to be wary of. We want to warn them that there may be people who try to enter into these leaseback options, things like that. And when somebody's in their first foreclosure, that probably isn't the first best option for them. And so unless there are other questions, I think that this notice is very straightforward and it speaks for itself.
Thank you. Corey, you could elaborate a little bit more. These were two of the three concepts that came from the work group that are contained in this bill, that notice being one that's really aimed at helping the consumer, giving them at least the information they need to look at the options that are in front of them. So if you could just elaborate on that a little bit for me.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and as you said, these are two of the three concepts coming out of the work group. The third one, incidentally, deals with enforcement tools for loan originators, who are the salespeople who deal with mortgages. And at the moment, we do not have the ability to actually ban a loan originator from the industry. We license the mortgage lenders, we license the mortgage brokers, but an individual loan originator can go from lender to lender, and we don't currently have the tools statutorily to ban them from the industry or suspend them or place conditions on their operations. So the bill that's coming out of the Senate side, which will, and we hope in due course, be over to this committee, deals with that issue. So then the two that are in here, as we've discussed, are the mortgage rescue concept and the foreclosure notice concept. And if you take a look at the foreclosure notice that starts on page 32, the idea really is, as Mr. Karn said, to get people right to what they need to know. And the distinction between the loan servicer, who knows how much you owe, and the lender, who has the ability to do a workout, we have heard actually from a number of people about the runaround that people get when they call the number that's associated with the payment that they make, because that's the call center, that's the servicer. It is not the actual anyone who has the authority to talk about what your options would be. And so this notice actually requires that you be given a toll-free number to contact both of those separately, the servicer or whoever can tell you what the dollar amount is, but also a representative of the lender and a live person, incidentally, who can actually talk to you about what your options are. The notice also refers you to counseling resources, as I said, and those two can help walk someone through the process and walk someone through the options. So we do, I should say, as has been mentioned, these are the products of a lot of work on the part of a lot of people. It's a little embarrassing for me to be sitting here and describing it to you because several of you have been very, very intimately involved in the details, Chair Holvey and then, of course, Representative Bonamici in particular. And I want to thank Representative Riley, whose image loomed over the plain language efforts in the foreclosure notice, and I'm expecting to get your feedback on whether we've done a decent job of that or not. In any event, this draft has just come out very recently, and I do want to say, as you probably know, that the work group is going to scrutinize it, and it may very well be that there's some technical issues, and I think one of them may have already been identified in terms of the drafting. And I also want to say, in terms of our summary, you'll probably be seeing some revised versions just because we're all operating under some fairly compressed time frames here. So I think any of us are happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, and I do know that people will be poring over these drafts, and hopefully they forward their concerns to myself or Teresa and Corey if you notice something in these drafts that is problematic for you or we need to discuss further. We need to do it relatively quickly to keep this bill on track. So I'm going to start out with one question, perhaps, and it's maybe not directly related to this draft, but as, and you may not be able to answer this, I don't know, you know, with this whole mortgage lending crisis that we've seen affect the whole nation, you know, as the market is, you know, theoretically correcting itself, you know, you hear that the credit's drying up and loan availability may become an issue. And so I'm curious whether anybody has any information about that as Oregon is facing many loans that are set to reset and need to be refinanced. Are those refinancing products going to be available out there for folks?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Corey Streisinger, Department of Consumer Business Services, and that's an interesting challenge. And right now, if you have a credit score of under 600, for example, the answer may be no, that you can't get a refinance loan, particularly if you don't have equity and you have a spotty income. Those types of loans were available. Maybe they shouldn't have been available, I think, is part of the message here, 6 months to a year ago. But right now, there are people with these loans who, if their credit and income has not improved since the time they took out the loan, they may not have refinancing options available to them. We're all anticipating that the credit markets will improve, but I don't think it's anticipated that that's going to happen in the very short term. 2008, I believe, is going to be a rocky year in terms of availability for mortgages for people with challenged credit. Now, for people with excellent credit or even good credit, there are loans available, and in fact, there are financial institutions who would love to talk to people wanting those loans because they're looking for business. But we have, as you know, seen a very sharp contraction in the mortgage lending business. A number of lenders have gone out of business or severely contracted their lending business, and it's going to take a while for that to recover. And it's because the financial markets generally, their appetite for risk has contracted very severely, and so the ability to securitize these loans and sell them into the financial markets is very limited. I'm probably not the person to be talking about macroeconomics, but there's a lot of interest in the Fed's move and what that's going to do to the lending markets generally. But in terms of subprime mortgages in particular, right now, there's not a lot of activity. And again, you may want to have some of the lenders come in and talk about those issues as you move forward, because I think there are a number of mortgage brokers, for example, who work with a broad spectrum of lenders who can give you a pretty clear picture of what products are available to what type of borrowers with what type of credit.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Representative Riley.
Yeah, a two-part question real quickly. I'm interested in, since these are two of the recommendations from the committee, I'm interested in who was represented on the committee and if this is a consensus of the committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, the committee was quite broadly representative, although not all of the members participated throughout the entire process. And this does represent a consensus of the committee. I don't believe that there's anyone who participated who is concerned or opposes these concepts. Although, again, as I think Mr. Ambrose said, the devil's in the details, but the products that came out are broad consensus products. I should also say, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, the work group is not finished, and we intend to take up additional issues, whether with that configuration of a work group or whether through a lot of other types of processes, but for issues that aren't addressed now, we fully expect that mortgage lending will be an active subject of discussion in 2009 as well.
Thank you. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just comment on the notice provision first, that other states have done a hotline or mortgage help hotline and have had a lot of success with that. And I see the notice as serving essentially that purpose because of the phone numbers and the availability of information there. So hopefully that will serve as a good resource for people. I have a question for Mr. Ambrose about the definition of equity conveyance, which is on page 19. And again, we just received this draft yesterday, late in the day. The definition of equity conveyance, we talked about several times, and I just want to make sure that what we ended up with is broad enough to encompass what we're trying to cover. Many of the other states define foreclosure or equity conveyance, including a transfer of interest by creation of a mortgage trust or other lien or encumbrance. And we didn't include that information, but we do have the transfer of an interest in a residence in foreclosure by an equity seller to an equity purchaser or to another person, etc. That allows the equity purchaser or other person to obtain legal or equitable title to all or part of the residential real property. And my goal in asking this question is just to make sure that you perceive that as broad enough to encompass what the other definitions, the other states use more specific language, and I just want to make sure that ours is broad enough to cover what we need to cover.
Thank you, Representative Bonamici. I believe the legal or equitable title language is broader than what I had seen in the other legislation, which was rather specific. I don't know the reasons why they're more specific than this, but as many of you may know, this legislation has been implemented in anywhere from 9 to 12 states thus far in a variety of forms. Some have just included one component. Others have included both components. So we did have the benefit, the task force had the benefit of reviewing a number of different forms of legislation around the country, most of which have been enacted within the last couple of years. So I'll certainly take a look at that issue again personally, Representative, but my belief is that the legal or equitable title language would be broad enough to cover virtually any type of situation that encompasses an arrangement in which there is going to be a transfer back.
Thank you. And a follow-up, please, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for mentioning the other states' legislation, and we did look at several other states. And I just want to let people know that about an hour ago, I received the final draft from the National Consumer Law Center of the model foreclosure rescue bill. So I just wanted to let everybody know that if there's some big red flag in there, I plan to discuss it. But we didn't have that model bill. We were looking at some former drafts of it, and like I said, other states. But there is a brand new within the last hour. I received a new model bill, so we'll be taking a look at that. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
Chair Holmes, there was one area that I neglected to mention, but I believe it is important, and that's dealing with the exemptions. And that is laid out for both of them, but they're dramatically different. For the foreclosure consultants, and there was a lot of discussion about this, the foreclosure consultant exemption section is rather large. For example, mortgage bankers and brokers who are acting within the course of their business who are helping out a client of theirs are within the terms of their license are not going to be required to enter into a separate agreement as a foreclosure consultant. And the litany is laid out. However, with equity conveyances, the exemptions consist of three, none of which I believe anybody will have any objection to. For example, a creditors committee in a bankruptcy action would technically fall under the statute, but they are exempted. A family member is exempted, and there's one other exemption. But realtors, mortgage bankers, brokers, attorneys for that matter, everybody other than that who is identified as being exempt under the foreclosure consultant language is not under the equity conveyance language. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Representative Riley, does that bring a question to your mind?
No, but I have a quick comment, if I may.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to thank Corey for mentioning the plain language, and I did read this now. I just got it late, so I didn't have a chance to read it before. It looks good, and I wanted to note for people here and people watching that in my committee tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, we'll have an update on how the state is doing on their implementation of plain language. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rowley. I'm sure you'll mention this particular piece of legislation. Our committee is really doing its part to try to get us there to plain language.
There you go.
So I was curious, you know, before you get up, just real briefly, if you could, perhaps, Corey, you're the right one to do that, why the exemptions for the foreclosure consultants are, does the state have other methods of looking at the individuals that are exempted under foreclosure consultants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hovey, yes, primarily the list of exemptions for foreclosure consultants are people who are licensed in some form or other and subject to professional standards or regulatory oversight, and the exemption, and Mr. Ambrose, correct me if I'm wrong, is limited to the normal course of the business conducted under that license or the scope of practice under that license. And it would be fairly cumbersome to, for example, require attorneys giving advice to their clients in the normal course of business, or real estate brokers discussing with a client the possibility of selling their home. Those are not the type of practices that we're concerned about in the consultant portion of the bill. Although, as we all said in the work group, anytime any of those people starts to take an interest, financial interest in the property, we are very concerned about that, and therefore the equity purchaser provisions apply wholesale. No exemptions for attorneys, real estate brokers, lenders, etc. That was the balance struck.
And can I follow up on that? Please.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also wanted to clarify what Mr. Ambrose said about the remedies. We thought it was more important for the consumers or homeowners in the equity conveyance portion to have a private right of action with a longer statute of limitation. So, because the risk is greater, the potential loss is greater. So that private right of action, I believe we pretty much agreed, did belong to the people involved in the equity conveyance. So.
Thank you. Anything else from the committee? Really appreciate all the work that everybody's done on this, and Corey, your department deserves a great deal of credit for managing this work group and staying on task to give us what I think is going to be some great legislation. So
thank you, Mr. Chair, and
that.
As you know, the real work is done by the staff sitting behind me in the room.
Well, I'm sure they'll get their praise in due course. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, I'd like to have Sybil Hebb.
Am I off the public service here or something? Chairs.
Good morning. If you would state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Chair Hovey, good morning. Chair Hovey and Vice Chair Bonamici, Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center, and good morning to the entire committee. I'm here to offer brief comments in support of LC 43 on behalf of the Law Center. We think the two concepts embodied within this bill proposal will be important steps in providing protection for vulnerable consumers. As you know, our mission is to provide access to social justice for low-income Oregonians, and unfortunately, over the last few years, we have seen a rise in the numbers of cases in which our clients have come to us at risk of losing their homes because of loans that they have entered or after they have already entered foreclosure proceedings. And we're seeing a number of increasingly complex cases. Unfortunately, many of those clients who come to us are seniors who may have owned their homes for quite some time and have gotten into renegotiated loan terms either because they've entered into financial difficulties or because they have been approached and offered these products and sort of gotten themselves into circumstances in which they realize too late rate that they have terms that are clearly not in their best interests, and unfortunately end up at risk of losing their most valued possession, their homes, which is also their safety and their security that they've had for a long time. The bill's expanded regulation of foreclosure consultants and equity purchasers, we think, will help prevent rogue acts from rogue actors. We don't mean to imply that the entire industry is inappropriate, but there are certain individuals who have taken advantage of vulnerable homeowners, and we think these steps will be reasonable minimum standards that will help provide better protection. We also are greatly appreciative of the plain language in the notice, the foreclosure notice. Many clients come to us and have not been aware of the resources that are available for them. We think the notice will go a long way towards providing them with a clear understanding of the circumstances that they're in, which they didn't have in the first place, and provide them hopefully with some access to services that can help them take steps to address and possibly save their homes. We're interested, very appreciative of the efforts that have been made both by the chair and the vice chair and the members, and by the governor and DCBS in putting forth these three concepts. We're also really interested in being a part of larger conversations moving forward as to some of the other practices that are causing problems for our clients, and look forward to being a part of that process. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next up, Angela Martin. Morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Angela Martin with Our Oregon. Chair Holby, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to make some brief comments in support of Legislative Concept 43. Like everyone else, I received it late last night and quickly pored through it, found it easy to understand. And the message that came through loud and clear is that as folks face foreclosure, and we know that number is going up, that this is the type of legislation that will offer consumers the protection they need on the day that they are facing financial and emotional turmoil of foreclosure. The National Consumer Law Center calls foreclosure rescue schemes, or I like the term home equity thieves, the new wave of fraud. And we can only expect to see more as foreclosures increase. Again, I'll state that this is the type of legislation that puts Oregon on par with other states that are taking very proactive steps to make sure that consumers understand their options. Too often, phone calls come into my office from individuals who are in that desperate moment. And I know that as I present them with phone numbers to call, with places to go, with steps to take, you can see their heightened crisis take steps down, and that it's backing them out of the corner with real options, real places to turn, that opens people's eyes onto the steps that they can be taking to save their home. So again, reading through the Legislative Concept 43, see some very strong ways that this will offer protection, and we are happy to put forth our support. And thanks for the committee and to the governor and the Department of Consumer and Business Services for their work on this.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. And next up, I have Matt Wallace. Good morning, and if you'd state your name again for the record, please.
For the record, Matt Wallace with OSPRD. Chair Holby, Vice Chair Bonamici, members of the committee, thanks again for the opportunity to speak on this speak on this important issue. I'd just like to make a few brief comments in support of Legislative Concept 43. By way of context, and has been mentioned, you know, we are in the midst of a mortgage meltdown. Every day, new headlines document the increasingly, you know, wide-ranging effects that we're seeing in the crisis in the mortgage market. Even an article in the Oregonian, I believe today, highlights additional chances that, that Oregon itself may suffer a recession due in no small part to national and local turmoil in the lending market and the resulting credit crunch. But of course, in addition to these hits to the economy at large, the people that are suffering the most from the results of the collapse in the mortgage meltdown market, and especially in subprime lending, are the individuals who are facing foreclosure, the families that stand to lose their homes as a result of you know, of the problems that we face. Those numbers, of course, are in the millions nationally, and here in Oregon, though we have fared better than many other states when it comes to weathering the effects and the rising tide of foreclosures, we stand to see thousands of people lose their homes. Director Streisinger mentioned the statistic of about 12,000, and other projections put that number you know, a little bit higher, near 20,000. But at any rate, the numbers are frightening for what we're looking at when it comes to the folks that are facing foreclosure. And of course, in the next year, we also expect to see thousands of Oregon families face the painful notice that the introductory teaser rates of their adjustable rate mortgages, generally subprime, will expire, and their monthly payments will go, you know, through the roof. So now, of course, is just a critical time this next session to take action on mortgage lending. And I'm happy to say that Legislative Concept 43 contains policies to address some of the problems that are facing families that are, again, in the worst of situations, the families that are facing the loss of their home through foreclosure. One of those issues, of course, is the so-called mortgage rescue scams, which you know, often result in either a service, well, exorbitant fees for a promise of a service that, that either doesn't exist or is something the consumer can do themselves, or in the worst cases, actually, again, you know, convincing the borrower to sign over the property with a promise that they'll be able to get it back, and again, that promise, of course, never materializes in the worst cases. This, you know, these policies, especially in sections, I believe 2 through 18, really deal with that particular area, and again, it's an important area, and we're happy to support that. And of course, sections 20 through 22 also can provide relief for consumers that are facing some of the worst effects, you know, again, of the mortgage collapse. People who are not financial wizards necessarily, and may rightfully be confused by the non-plain language and the technical language that accompanies foreclosure notices. So we're encouraged both by the requirement of plain, clear language for, you know, how and when and who to contact, and also, of course, by the existence of toll-free numbers that borrowers can call, not only to get the facts about their mortgages and what they owe, but also, of course, resources to help them pursue options to guide them through the process, and in some cases hopefully help them stay in their home. So again, we're happy to see these two steps taken forward, and I would of course like to thank the members of this committee, Chair Holvey and Vice Chair Bonamici especially, who helped craft you know, these concepts, and look forward to continuing to work on these issues specifically, and of course the very wide range of issues that are facing mortgage lending in Oregon in the upcoming session.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate you being here and weighing in. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to testify on LC 43 at this time? Any comments? Seeing none, any more discussion from the committee? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on LC 43. And at this time, I'd like to open a work session on LC 43.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you. I move that LC 43 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session.
Representative Bonamici moves that LC 43 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session. Any discussion?
Representative Girod.
My standard disclaimer, and I, first of all, I'd like to compliment Representative Bonamici. It's difficult to put groups together and come up with a piece of legislation. I think she's done a fine job. I will be voting to have this introduced, but I do reserve the right to be a hell no vote. That was a joke.
I was laughing.
I could tell.
So noted. That's true with any of these concepts. It doesn't just because you're voting on it for introduction doesn't mean you're bound to vote for it in its final form or any forms it takes in the future. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Girod for thanking Representative Bonamici, and especially to thank him for explaining his humor. It's always helpful.
Thank you, Representative Gilliam.
Might learn a lesson from that.
Any other discussion? I think this concept is really aimed at accomplishing some things. I commend again DCBS and all those that participated in hammering out these issues and getting them drafted and Legislative Council as well. You know, they're under a time clock as well for combing through this. I think they've done a great job, but. Again, I know people haven't had a chance to thoroughly read this, but I'm sure you will, and please make sure to any concerns that you forward them on. With that, those of the opinion that LC 43 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session will vote aye, and those opposed will vote no. Susan, will you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative
Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative
Girod.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bolton.
Aye. Chair
Bolton. Hell yes. So, seeing that LC 43 has received the required votes, will be recommended for introduction in the February 2000 special session. With that, I would close the work session on Legislative Concept 43. Any other discussion from the committee on any other issues that Representative Girod?
Representative Holby, there has been rumored, and it could be true, that this might be my last meeting. There is that possibility. And I would like to thank each and every one of you on this committee. I've enjoyed working with you. If it does come to that, it may or may not happen. And I want to express my gratitude to you, the chair, personally, for putting me on this. I'm sure there were days that you questioned that decision, but I have enjoyed my stay here, and I enjoy working with you.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure having you on the committee. So, you know.
But you're still mine.
And you're still on it, as far as I'm concerned, until I'm notified otherwise. So you're going to have to show up. So, anything else? Well, committee, we will be going into February having more hearings on these concepts and perhaps some others. And again, appreciate your attention to this process. It's going to be moving rather quickly. So. Stay tuned and thank our administrator. She will be always involved with this committee, but we may have the assistance of another administrator as well. And so stay tuned for that. We will try to get some good legislation through in February. And appreciate you being here. With that, I'd like to close the House Interim Committee on Consumer Protection.